Welcome back to Willis Outdoor Adventures podcast. I'm here with John Mark.
Hello, guys.
Mark.
Hey.
And Uncle Scott.
Hello.
So for those of you who don't know, John Mark's my cousin. He's Mark's son, and Scott is my other uncle on my dad's side. So today we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, but all of it's basically going to be revolving around two-wheeled sports. We'll put it that way. So what I'd like to start by doing is I guess I'll ask each of you how you got involved in two-wheeled sports. We're specifically going to be gearing this one towards dual sporting, but I just want to hear you guys' history first off about like how you got into this stuff, how old you were and stuff. So maybe we'll start, Scott, you're the oldest on this podcast right now. Maybe we'll start with you.
Okay, so how did I get into dual sporting?
Yeah.
So I grew up, my very first motorcycle, I don't even remember how old were we when we got the mini bike.
I think I was 10, you were maybe 13.
Well, I bought my first motorcycle when I was 13. We'll go with that. It was a Yamaha 90 down here at the lake,
yeah,
which is where we are now. So I bought my first motorcycle then. I grew up dirt biking.
Okay, yeah.
So we did a lot of dirt biking. I didn't start, really the real reason I got into dual sport is I got too old to dirt bike. it was just wearing me out. I couldn't hardly do it anymore. So I traded my dirt bike in for a dual sport. That's kind of how I got into it.
So when you bought your first bike, how did that go? Did you just tell your parents, hey, I want to buy?
Oh, yeah. My dad had brought home a mini bike. It was a Honda 70.
Okay.
It was in a cardboard box in pieces. That's how our very first motorcycle came about. So he brought that home, and we were like just drooling, ready to ride that thing. So we helped dad. Well, dad did it all. We kind of were there, but we worked with dad, and he put the whole thing all back together and got it running. So that was one bike. And then when I found, we were down here at the lake riding that bike around, and I saw
two up,
and I saw an old Yamaha 90 laying up outside against a garage that was just rotted. It was just terrible. Wasn't running, and I knocked on the guy. I came back home. I said, Dad, I found a bike. I want to buy a bike. And I convinced him to let me make an offer. I offered a guy $40. I bought that bike for $40.
Wow.
I was 13 years old. I paid my own money for it. And brought it home and tore it. Third gear was out. And what else? I tore that thing down to the frame, painted it, got the whole thing going. We had the whole engine spread out downstairs on the ping pong table. I don't know if you remember that. There's a lot of history there, but anyway, that was my first motorcycle, and I've had, you know, quite a few different ones between now and then.
That sounds like a good place to start, starting with kind of a fixer-upper, because then you get to know, and you get confident.
It was years and years of just dirt biking. I had a street-legal bike when I was in college.
Okay.
But it was kind of a dual sport. It was old Yamaha.
Okay.
250, actually.
So, Mark, what about you?
How'd you get in?
Scott got that bike, and you probably fiddled around with it, but what ignited that fire in you?
Oh, it just combined a lot of things for us. Like Scott said, I remember watching this Motocross de Nations when we were like, I was probably 8 years old.
Wow.
And we would check out every dirt bike magazine from the library. We bugged and bugged and bugged Dad. And he said, no. And, you know, all that time I thought we were poor, but what I did in hindsight, that's how Dad taught us how to work on bikes. He bought one that wouldn't run, and we had it spread out on the ping pong table, and he would pick up a piece and say, where does this go? And does this fit with this? It was pretty amazing. The passion is we were outside, we were exploring, it was adventure. Once we got two bikes, you know, they say, when the first motorcycle race started, it was as soon as they made second motorcycle. So we had two bikes. We had a little mini Honda 70, we had Scott's 90, and we rode down here like those are, I mean, for hours. We'd be gone for hours. We knew every nook and cranny of the lake, and then we discovered you could actually go ride trails. Wow. And then we discovered you could actually go race against other guys, you know, and see what you got. And then we did start getting a little bit older. It's a lot of work to ride dirt bikes. They get dirty. You got to trailer them somewhere to ride them. You got to load them up. And Then you got to change oil, clean air filters, wash all your gear. And I think what we kind of realized as we were getting older and riding dirt bikes less and less and less, this whole dual sport kind of adventure craze came along. And I think I jumped on it first. Me and Doug actually took a ride down in Arkansas. Both our bikes blew up. I was on a borrowed 250, a Kawasaki borrowed from Tim Headland. And I had to buy a parts bike. I put a parts bike, swapped the whole top end with a bottom end, and gave the bike back to him. Said, thanks, Tim. We had a great time.
He knows about that now, I guess?
Yes, okay. He does.
How long till he knew about it,
Doug? No, I told him.
Okay. That reminds me of the time Joe borrowed a bike and drowned it in a creek crossing.
Yeah. We got lots of stories. He submarined his buddy's bike. Said, hey, it runs great. Thanks.
That's too funny. Yeah, that's fun to hear about because, like, for a couple reasons. One, your boys now buzz around on bikes the lake, and it sounds like what you guys did. Just loving it. And then two, I actually remember as a kid being at like one or two of your races or events with dirt bikes. And I remember one time specifically, it was like super cold. I didn't even know, you know, I was probably 4 years old or 3 years old. I didn't know why we were there. I was like, I just want a blanket and like something to keep warm. And we were like watching you race, I guess. But, and Scott, I don't know if you were in that or not. I think it might have just been
Mark. Did a lot more racing than I did. Okay. I only did like three or four races in my life.
Okay, well.
Mark did a lot more.
So by the time we started getting decent bikes, Scott was a little bit further along in life's seasons.
That makes sense.
Got a girl and kind of got married, and I had a lot more time.
I was still single,
you know, going to college and racing. So anyways, as we got older, we got into our 40s or whatever, and it was just harder and harder and harder to go dirt biking. Okay. I didn't want to give up riding with my buddies and my brothers. So I bought a dual sport bike, got a Suzuki 400, and I think I went on a Missouri ride, Swinging Bridges ride, like, I don't know, 2011 or something. Oh, wow. And then I talked Scott into getting a bike. He bought a KLR 650, I think.
My first bike,
And then we were riding and camping also bikes, which was a whole new dimension. It was a kind of a progression from, you know, exploring on gravel, then we're camping off gravel, we're riding racing trails. And then we ended up just adventuring off the bikes where you're camping off the bikes, cooking off the bikes. You can stop wherever you want. And it opened up a whole new realm of scenery and adventure for us.
It's like the backpacking version of hiking. Like the
It's moto packing or bike packing. Okay. Yeah.
So, John Mark, you haven't had a chance to say much, but that's because at this point, you weren't alive yet. But obviously your dad was into two-wheel sports. Dirt biking, got into dual sporting, so I guess that might be part of it, but I'd love to hear where the passion came for you and when was your decision, how did you get your first bike? I'd love to hear that story too.
So I think it all, I mean, mainly just dad, but I remember just sitting in the shed, just watching dad work on his KTM, I don't know what it was, KTM, you know, 250 or something. He always rode with Brian in the back. And then I'd just sit and watch work on him and ride, and I always dreamed about riding. And then I think when we were four, me and Caleb was, five or something, I was four, and he got us a PW50, a little purple and white.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know, like, I think Cole Fitzmorse gave it to us.
Somebody gave us that, we got it running.
Yeah, and then we cleaned the car, I don't know what we did to it. But we got it running, and then we rode that day and night, just burned through gas all day while Dad was at work. It was just any little bumps, we'd start riding, trying to jump it and just tear it up.
Your gas expense went way up.
Yeah. We burned gas all day long. And then I think we got another one, some two-stroke Suzuki, and Caleb started riding. And then from there, it just kind of went, and I bought it, we kept just going through dirt bikes.
So when did you get your first dual sport?
Dual sport, Dad gave up dirt biking a lot sooner than me and Caleb did. Me and Judah and Caleb had bikes for, I mean, probably 3 years when Dad didn't.
Okay.
And then I was like, well, it's not as fun riding without Dad because he's way faster. And we kind of just slowly went from there. I bought one off Doug.
Doug White, right?
Yeah.
Family friend.
Yeah.
Okay. He's my college buddy from, you know, 30-something years ago,
Okay. So I borrowed his bike for one, I think Arkansas ride was my first one. And then after that, kind of fell in love and then done it since.
Sweet. So ultimately, we're trying to get to a destination in this conversation where we're talking about a specific dual sport trip that you guys went on. I know you guys have gone on quite a few, Colorado, Wyoming, a couple to Arkansas. But we kind of talked before the podcast was going, and we figured Colorado would be a fun one to talk about. So now we're all kind of caught up on how you guys got into it, how you got your bikes and stuff. Let's get into leading into this Colorado trip. Who's usually the initiator when it comes to these trips, would you say? Or who initiated this one? Let's put it that way.
I think I did.
Scott? Yeah.
Okay. That's a trip I kind of headed up, put together. There's an organization, a nonprofit organization called BDR, Backcountry Discovery Routes. So the Colorado ride that we went on was a combination of the Backcountry Discovery Route and also some extra tracks that I put together for that trip.
Awesome. So you did some of the planning and mapping out, and
yeah.
So what, you texted Mark, and who else did you text to?
We had a whole group. We started that ride with 12 guys. We had a big group. That was our biggest group of guys we had on any ride so far.
Okay, well, we started with 12.
We started with 12. We finished with 8.
So they're still out there?
we had some adventure on that ride. We had some breakdowns, some crashes. Yeah, we can get into that later.
Yeah, no, let's do it. So this was in the year 2019?
This was fall of 2020.
Okay, so just two and a half years ago.
So we trailered out to Colorado. We started in Gypsum, Colorado. We rode down, it's all backcountry discovery roads, you know, gravel roads, dirt roads,
okay.
Forest Service roads. So we rode down to down to Lake City, Ouray, Telluride, down in that area, did okay. The Alpine Loop.
Pretty far south then.
Down around the San Juan Mountains.
Nice.
So, if I may, just a word about these routes. The whole strategy of a backcountry discovery route, they take some of the most scenic and beautiful and historic places in a state, and they stitch these roads and trails together with as little blacktop as possible, as much scenery and history as possible. And you go from a state border, usually north to south. So we almost started at the southern border, and then we didn't quite do all. We did more or less the southern half.
We skipped the northern half.
We didn't do the northern half.
Yeah, the routes traverse the whole state.
Oh wow!
Primarily off road.
So this organization that you're talking about, they don't build the trails or the roads. They just map them out.
They map out existing trails, and then they provide the GPS routes.
Okay,
and you can use their tracks.
Nice. So it's helpful just to be like, oh, this is a good route that. It's really cool, really pretty.
Yeah,
because, and we don't have to like scratch our head and figure out where we're going.
They take you know, a year or more to develop these routes.
Okay,
and then they share that with the BDR community.
Cool. So, John Mark, you mentioned earlier your dad is a very fast rider, or was in the past. I mean, I don't know much about this, but how does the pacing work when you guys are in a big group like this? Is one guy just like, all right, we're going to set a pace that everybody can keep, or how does that look?
So normally, I feel like either Dad or you lead most of the, or Josh, whoever plays a GPS at work.
The better navigators usually lead the pack.
And faster rider, Josh and Dad.
And it's, I mean, we're not at this point, dual sporting is not so much a race.
Okay.
We're not trying to like race or anything. We ride at a comfortable pace, and sometimes we get going a little bit. Depends on the terrain.
Yeah. So are these mostly minimal maintenance roads or just dirt roads?
There's no single track usually.
Okay.
They're all two track.
Which I always ask if we can throw some of that in.
Yeah, right.
Don't always get it. But.
Nice. So the scenery is obviously something that was probably pretty cool. Was there any other like huge highlights or memories in this trip? Or just take us through the general itinerary. And maybe if you can remember days, that'd be awesome. Like, oh, this happened day one. This happened... And, like, how far you rode. Just give us some of the juicy details, I guess.
I mean, for me, the best part of the trip was the Alpine Loop. So you're riding down there in the San Juan Mountains. You're up. We got up over 13,000 feet, you know, riding on trails, on bikes. You're going up and down mountains. It's some of the best riding I've ever done in my life. I love it out there in Colorado. Plus, you get the scenery. It's beautiful. We saw elk, deer. I mean, we saw moose. All kinds of different wildlife on the trip because you're in the backcountry. It's kind of like a backpacking trip on wheels.
Right.
It's the same sort of scenario, but you're on wheels. You're camping off the bike. I don't know. I love it.
So, John Mark, was this one of your first times in the mountains, or how's that look?
I think we went one other time, but family vacation, so
okay,
hardly. We didn't touch a whole lot of the mountains.
But you were like, wow, this is pretty.
Yeah, and so we went in fall, too, so it was absolutely gorgeous. The trees, perfect timing.
Oh, yeah, the last day, aspens were just amazing.
Late September, I guess, or early September, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, wow. It was early. That's so cool. So I love the dynamic of having, like, some of, like, Jean-Marc, your parents' generation, and then also your kids' generation together. Did that provide any challenges? Was it all just positive?
It's awesome riding with your kids. I mean, you can't beat it. It's just incredible having that experience with your own sons.
That is super.
So I had two boys on that trip.
I don't think.
Yeah, they always pull you out of the mud puddles and pick your bike up. And Scott's had his own support group for years.
I gotta make sure I got at least one of my boys on every trip.
My boys don't do that for me. I don't get no sympathy, man. I'm on my own.
They just leave you?
Well, they haven't left me, but I don't. Okay. I don't know.
Jean-Marc was over there, man.
Well,
Jean-Marc, what are you thinking of?
Normally, he's always ahead. We don't see him.
I'm not picking my bike up a whole lot. I don't know. Scott, the problem is we've all been on different motorcycles, and typically Scott's on a much bigger, heavier motorcycle. Okay. I ride the smallest, lightest thing I can find.
Okay.
I think I've only seen you lay it down a couple times, though.
Right.
Not a whole lot of times we can help you.
So, yeah, were there any wrecks or incidents while you guys were out there?
Yeah, Colorado, we had a couple incidents. So, well,
like we said, we started with 12 and we finished with 8.
Yeah, so we had at least four.
All the carnage we had.
So
there,
the diciest one was, well, we had several mechanicals, then we had one injury. This was really actually our only time on nearly every big trip. We've done 3 BDRs, or I have with this group together. I think Scott's done several more extra additional BDRs. But okay, so we get down in these mountains, and some of these passes are somewhat a little sketchy. These are Jeep trails, but you've got sheer drop-offs, huge switchbacks, which, you know, even Jeeps are doing like 2-point, 3-point turns. Huh. And you got rock ledges that are drop-offs and stuff. We got the one hill.
Black Bear Pass, wasn't it?
Yeah, Black Bear Pass was sketchy. Ryan, so we got radio communications. We're going down Black Bear Pass, and Ryan Barron is just screaming. Ryan saying, oh, no, I don't like this. I don't like this. You hear it on the radio, y'all. He's on a big GS800, and he forgot to turn his ABS off. So he didn't have a whole lot of control. So, and this bike is just pitching.
So is it worse going up the passes or down the passes?
I think it's worse going down, but
it's always funner going up.
There was like a sheer 800,000-foot cliff on the exposed rock, and he's going down. It was kind of sketchy.
Yeah, but it's cliff down one side. You got a lane to ride in,
and it's off
cliff
camber.
Cliff up the other.
And there was a big turn too with rock ledges. You're going down.
So that was kind of fun. We all got down there and made it okay. We got to one hill though. Here's one incident. For example, Scott had picked out these tracks, but what we didn't realize or know beforehand was some of these trails were like directional. So apparently, in hindsight, we found out we were going the wrong way on this trail.
Oh,
and we got to this one hill. I think we got to this one hill, Poughkeepsie Gulch. We got to this hill that had these baby head sized loose rocks. Yeah. And me and Caleb and Josh got like halfway up, but we couldn't get any further. We were like burning our clutch. Half the guys are sitting at the bottom, and there's like 2 or 3 Aaron and a couple others are strewn all over the hill.
It was steep.
At that point, the guys, we burned up 3 clutches on that hill. One clutch, bike wouldn't hardly go.
Ooh.
We had to go into town, and Mike Mudry burned up his clutch on a Suzuki.
That's where we lost Mike.
He bailed as our first mechanical of the ride. He bailed on the ride and says, my bike is unrideable. I cannot continue on this ride.
Wow. Yeah. So, I guess, humor me, because I'm not really a rider. So when you burn the clutch, is that because you have to keep it in a low gear, and then what, your engine speed is too high, or why does that happen?
Well, think
about a Jeep trying to clutch up a steep hill with a bunch of rocks, and you can't get up speed because you're going slow,
right?
So you're constantly trying to clutch and get going again.
You overheat your clutch.
There was a few riders probably could have got to the top of that hill. I think Josh, me, and maybe another guy or so. But half the group could have made it.
So what'd you end up doing? Did you have to turn around?
We turned around, we reroute.
That is one spot we couldn't make.
And the saddest part was there's like these 80-year-olds in side by side just crawling right up the hill, and we're all like pulling our clutches, and these 80-year-old women are waving at us. I was like, are you kidding me?
So that gives you an idea. Some of this terrain was very, very technical. It was very, very steep. We're in remote wilderness areas, and we had gone for a little ways. One morning, we just started our ride. I think we had breakfast in town, and we're on our ways. We get up in the mountains, and there's rock ledges again, and we got up high, and we're waiting for the group to regroup. And Doug, we see Doug way down in the distance. I think Doug and Tom. Doug went down.
Ooh.
And Doug was slow to get up. He's not getting up. And he didn't pick his bike up. Tom picked his bike up. And we knew everybody, you know, got off their bikes, kickstands down. They popped their helmets and were like, this could be bad. So Doug got up and he's holding his elbow.
Yeah, this is on Imogene.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that was Imogene.
Imogene going on our way
on the way up.
Imogene Pass.
Yep, on the way up.
So this is fairly early in the morning. We get Doug up. Finally, Doug.
It's actually close to the pass, close to the top.
So we're almost all the way to the top.
Yeah. Well, I think when we stopped, we were at the top, weren't we?
Well, not quite, but close. Yeah.
So Tom picked his bike up. Doug got on it, and he was able to ride up to where we were. But then he stopped and like just slid off his bike, took his helmet off. He was white as a sheet.
Oh no!
So we got out of camp chair. We sat him down. He's going into shock. It's very, very obvious. I think we got some Tylenol in him. We splinted his arm, and then we're trying to figure out how do we get
him. So what, his arm, his elbow or his arm was hurt?
He broke his wrist. Well,
long story short, we found out later, he ended up having to get a ride. We had another dude come show up on like a 500, was he on a Husky 500?
Well, you got to understand our predicament.
Yeah,
we're in the middle of nowhere.
We're in the middle.
Yeah, we got a guy that can't out there. Yeah,
we got a guy that can't ride out. And we got a motorcycle, an additional motorcycle that has to get off this mountain. So we're talking about shuttling down and renting a jeep, you know, a jeep tour, and coming back up, and then you know having to rent a razor or something and tie downs.
We were trying to figure out
how to get his bike off the mountain. How do we get Doug out of here? How do we get the bike out of here?
Yeah.
So fortunately, we're trying to figure all this out because Doug, you know, hey, can you ride? So he gets on his bike and goes in a little circle and says, this ain't happening. So we sat him down in the camp chair and we're trying to doctor him and get some water in him. He was feeling nauseous. He's going to throw up. And we're like, this is not a good situation. So fortunately, there was a pickup truck came up. A guy was four-wheeling the entire pass, the whole loop that we were on. And we flagged him down and said, man, we got an injured rider. And this guy was gracious enough. We unloaded all his camping gear, put it in the back of the crew cab. We loaded Doug's bike up. We cinched it down.
Wow.
And he says, I will get him to town.
Wow. So we loaded Doug in that truck.
What a good
truck. Yes.
Yeah. The guy was awesome.
Dude, it was like a 7-hour track.
Oh.
And Doug's like jostling around, you know, holding his
elbow. Oh my gosh.
It was not like, 20 minutes, we're in Telluride. So
did you get that guy's contact? Have you kept in contact with that guy?
We should have.
Okay.
I don't know. We did not. Yeah. Doug maybe did.
Okay.
So in the meantime, I think at some elevation we had cell reception again. Mm-hmm. We got a hold of the guy that bailed with the clutch, Mike.
Yeah.
We called Mike and said, listen, Doug,
we got another one down.
Doug is hurt. Doug, we got Doug a ride to Telluride. You need to meet this guy at Telluride and pick Doug up, take him to the hospital.
Lake City is where.
Yeah, pick him up and take him to the hospital.
So Mike
borrows a car from a friend of his in Colorado. I mean, logistically, we had some challenges on this.
Oh
ride.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds
so
like
it was actually Lake City where he got a ride to, and we met him. We caught up to him in Lake City, and he had. He went to a clinic and got x-rays. Long story short, he broke his arm.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's what happened to Doug. So he was out for the rest of the trip. Mike's out at this point.
So how did you get Mike's bike out of there? Did he just limp
Mike
it out?
Mike had previously lived in Grand Junction, Colorado.
Okay.
So he had buddies up there. He had a buddy come pick him up, I think, from Grand Junction.
Goodness. Hey, guys, I actually never done this before, but I got to pee, so... John Mark, you're in charge of asking questions. I'll be right back. Mark, keep the conversation
going. All right. Well, I guess one more episode we'll tell you about on this trip was kind of a funny trip. We got to a place. The sun is getting low in the sky. We need to find a campsite, and we're rolling through the mountains. And we set up camp in a low-lying area, and it is getting cold. And we know it is going to be a cold night. Everybody was racing to put their tent up and, like, get their dinners made and climb in their sleeping bags. I went to the bathroom, and I saw a sign for a trailhead that said Handy's Peak. And there was another 14er. There was another one on the other side of the road. So I come back to camp. This is already after sunset. You know, most guys have eaten dinner. And we're sitting around, you know.
After a long, hard day's
ride. Right, 12 hours of riding,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And it is getting cold. I mean, we're like getting a frost. And this is not even, what, 8 o'clock at night or something. And a handful of the guys, I think Aaron Mudry. So we ought to tell who even went on the ride. So Aaron Mudry, Josh Willis, my son Caleb Willis, John Mark Willis, and a handful of other guys. Maybe Ryan, yep. I think they say, hey, we're just going to go for a little walk. And I know exactly what this means. So, John Mark, why don't you take it from there?
Okay, so actually, right before this, I think it was like 40 minutes before this, we were on a gravel road. We were trying to fight to find a campsite because it was getting cold and dark. And we were in a valley.
This
and like
you turned around.
Yeah. And this is so we were flying on the gravel, probably doing 65 miles an hour probably. And Dad's probably in the front. And there's this turn, and, you know, people are going by, whatever. I think I'm, I don't know, fourth or fifth in the line. And I'm right behind Aaron. And Aaron goes over this I don't know, it doesn't look huge, but a little bump. And it has, like, a little gap. So it's basically a mini jump, but with this gravel, I guess. And Aaron barely gets past. I'm, like, 2 feet behind him, you know, whatever. Following him, really tailing him way too tight. And I hit it, like, a foot to the left. And I just nose that. My front tire gets locked in there. I go flying over the bars. I'm knocked out for I don't know how long. But I wake up this lady in my face. I'm a nurse. What do you need? I was like, I'm fine. Get out of my face, please. And I just hop on my bike. And before the ride, so it's pretty cold. So I cut this 5 gallon bucket in half. And I glued them to my handlebars. And my bucket was snapped. And I was like so mad because my hands were cold the rest of the ride. I was like, I need my buckets back. Anyways, so
you got pretty scammed up on that.
Oh, one. Yeah.
Oh,
so
he was all banged up.
Yeah, my elbow was pretty bad. I was in pain. That and my bars were all screwed up. And my whole bike was kind of tweaked. And I was just the most mad. I lost my buckets. But anyways, so after that, I was just, you know, whatever. And so we're finding the campsite. And like I was saying, we found the trailhead. And me and Aaron and Caleb and Josh were like, oh, well, let's just go start up and see what happens. And I think Josh pulled out his map. He's like, oh, this is 14. Let's go do this.
So what was that one? Do you know?
I think it was Handy's.
Yeah.
Verify that with Caleb.
I think it was.
Handy's Peak. And then we get, like, I don't know, a couple miles in, and I'm in Chacos, Aaron's in slippers, and...
And Caleb is barefoot.
And Caleb's barefoot, yeah. And
he's in a pair of shorts.
Yeah.
And he's barefoot.
Yeah.
I think he's got a t-shirt on. Okay.
Yeah.
Josh has a hoodie on.
All he has, you know, is riding.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
This wasn't an eye.
And so he's looking at the map. It's like, oh, you know, we have 12 miles to the top. And me and Aaron are like, we don't have any food. We don't have any water. Caleb's barefoot. We don't
no
have
lights.
Any, you know, wow. No lights. Like, we have nothing. Like, my elbow was scraped up. I was like, you know, Aaron, like, if I head back, will you head back? You know, whatever. So me and Aaron were like, I'm going to go get some sleep. Whatever.
Nice.
You know what the last thing that Dad says before the boys leave camp?
Probably stick together.
Hey, you guys may want to wear shoes and bring something to eat and drink.
Yeah. And they said.
I did.
So they said, no thanks, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. We got this. Right. I got this. All right.
Thanks for the advice. See you later.
Exactly.
That happens pretty often.
Exactly.
But anyways. So they keep going. When me and Aaron got back, it was still like pretty cold. I'm going to say it was like 40, 35 degrees out. And we're like, wow. So we got in bed pretty quick. We didn't stay up too late.
What time do you think you got back to camp?
Oh, I don't know. 8:30, 9 o'clock probably.
Okay.
It's dark by this time.
Yeah, yeah. Past dark. And everybody's in bed because it's cold. I think besides you, you stayed up for a little bit. And we talked.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
10, 15 minutes. And then we went to bed.
Right.
So what ended up happening? Did they get up? Or?
So yeah, they hiked.
They summited.
Almost. I mean, they probably got back at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Wow.
And then they had snow on top a little bit too. So Caleb was barefoot.
He hiked the
snow.
Whole hike barefoot.
Yeah.
Through exposed granite, that sharp rocks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he got back and his feet were purple. It looks like he.
Blistery.
They were like lacerations. It looked like he walked through like shark infested water. His feet were so tore up. I don't know how we put socks and boots on the next day.
And the next day they were both poops too. So like, they were dead.
Here's a question: these guys went out and did this by their own decision. Did they complain a lot the rest of the trip, or were they just like, hey?
You didn't hear a word from me.
They loved it. In fact, Caleb was like, hey, the next dual sport, we got to do a 14er.
Yeah. He loved it. So one of Caleb's, you know this about Caleb, Tim, you probably got a similar thing going on. He's got a goal to challenge our kids to make goals every year. Mm-hmm. One of Caleb's goals, long-term goals, is to summit every 14er in Colorado.
Wow. Yeah.
So Caleb, at that point, has got the bright idea. He's like, this is awesome, because we're combining the dual sport ride with his 14er obsession. He's talking to Scott and I, like, you know, can we just stitch together a ride that connects all these 14ers? Yeah. I'll do like 8 14ers in a week, you know, we can hit all of them.
That was like a bonus. That wasn't quite planned that way.
Right.
So that was a bonus for him, and Josh loved it too.
That is nice.
I don't know, what else?
There's a lot of interesting sights and scenery, just the goat's towns. You know, you stop and you eat a meal, and there's a lot of laughter. It was very much of an adventure. So every time somebody would drop out, like Doug or Mike, we would have these logistical challenges. So on the way back to the truck, Ryan, his bearings...
He had his rear wheel bearings going out.
Right. Mm. And we had to figure out, can he make it to a town? Can he not make it? We stopped at a dealer and tried to get by parts, and we couldn't figure it. So Ryan decides he's going to go a different route. And he drove his truck. So he got three or four of us out there. So he gave me keys to his truck. And he says, I'll meet you back at the truck.
He ended up, he took his bike. The only place he could find parts is in Denver. So he ended up riding his bike, hoping the bearing wouldn't completely go out.
Right.
He got to Denver. He got his wheel bearing replaced. And he ended up, he rode his bike all the way back home.
Right.
Which was how long? Like 12, 14 hours?
From Denver.
He did. He called. So he called and says, hey, I made it, and I think I'm just going to keep going. I said, what do you mean? Where do you want me to meet you? He says, no, I'm just going to keep going. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I think I'm just going to ride home. So he had a much bigger bike that would gobble up highway miles, and he sat on his GS for like, 15 hours the next day and drove it home.
Wow.
So
here's a question: how many miles do you guys think you have total riding a three or a two wheeled vehicle?
Total? I don't know. That trip alone was about 800 miles. That was a 6-day trip. We did 5 nights on that.
So thousands and thousands.
That was probably just one trip.
Yeah. We got thousands. I mean, so, multiplied thousands. Yeah.
We got thousands of miles, but
that's crazy. Did you guys meet any crazy characters while you were out there?
Not really on that trip. I don't remember.
Not on that trip. I mean, we have met some characters. We run across quite some scenes and stuff.
We can talk about Eminence sometime.
Yeah, we had a toothless...
We don't have to go to Colorado to meet crazies.
We had a toothless meth addict stop. We're primitive camping in the middle of nowhere in a Mark Twain National Forest. Got this guy named Kevin stops and tries to sell us ribeyes. And Scott's like, hey, I think I'll do it. I'll take the Mountain Dew. Yeah. And the Mountain Dew was half there. He says, hang on just a second. So he takes a big swing and says, here, you can have it. I'm like, I'll drink it. The guys are like, you don't know what kind of rabies this guy has. Scott was like, nobody wants to buy the ribeyes with me? And everybody's like, I don't think so, man. Because they were in his cooler and the guy's been fishing. I mean, the whole thing was super sketch. And he went by like back and forth like 5 times, you know. I'm like, okay, is this guy stalking us or what?
Oh my gosh. He's probably using it for catfish bait.
Some shady characters. We camped in some shady spots too.
I know it, man.
Yeah. Oh, that's good stuff. Is there any other highlights or lowlights or anything that you guys want to mention before we wrap her up? We're longer than I thought we'd be, a little over 30 minutes.
Oh yeah. We should probably wrap up.
So
it's a lot of fun is all I can say.
Any of you guys who listen to the podcast, we usually do like a homework assignment. One is podcast related, like share with a friend, share it on your social media, and then one is like more like challenge yourself or have fun. Could you guys help me think of any homework assignments that we can do? Oh, here. Okay, so for the I'll do the podcast one, and then
it's New Year's Eve night. We need a New Year's resolution.
Okay, yeah.
You could challenge everybody to do their New Year's resolutions.
Okay, that's good, actually.
Or whatever your idea
was. Well, my idea was the podcast one was just, I guess, what's it called? Rate it. Just give it a 5-star rating or review. That would help. And then, Scott, I guess just do your New Year's resolutions. Write them out and make sure you do them.
Yeah, challenge everybody to do that.
Yeah, so do that. What else would you say to that? Just, is that something you guys do every year?
Sometimes.
Okay, cool. All right, well, get a list of New Year's resolutions or maybe even just one big one and make sure you stick to it.
There you go.
Sound good, guys?
Sounds good.
All right, thank y'all. We'll talk to you on the next one.